as well.
So one thing I didn't get was you said something about the two dimensions. You took your paper and right. you said if two dimensions were rolled up like a scroll, it would make it less dimensions.
Right.
But to me, it looked like three dimensions all of a sudden.
Well, you're right. In a sense, you go from a paper to a cylinder. A cylinder is three dimensions. Mm-hmm. You start rolling that tighter and tighter and tighter until the height of the cylinder, okay, or the radius of its cross section, collapses to zero. You've now got a one-dimensional line.
Oh, okay, you just didn't flatten your paper.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't crinkle it all the way.
Okay.
But you kind of see it taking it to that extreme. And so I don't know what the physicists really say. Like, in a way, these other six dimensions, I don't say that they're saying that they've really completely gone away. They're just rolled up so tight we don't see them or interact with them.
Dormant genes.
In a sense, kind of like that. Okay. And they might interact with, you know, string theory or something, which...
Is that connected to what you said? Because there's another thing I couldn't quite get, which was you said something about our three-dimensional world wrapped around something four-dimensional?
Yeah. Yeah, this is another thought is what's the curvature of our universe, okay? And
when you say that, do you mean the shape?
Yeah, kind of in a sense, in a shape. And you could, again, you've got to go back to see that flatland. It's like a 5-minute video. See Dr. Quantum Physics Flatland. Okay, imagine our flat Earth for a second. Okay, you say, well, what's the shape of our Earth? Well, our Earth's flat. You know, that's the shape. Well, is there any bend to it? Could it be shaped like a saddle?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it turns out it's shaped like a sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being shaped like a sphere, meaning two parallel lines on the Earth, okay, if you go far enough, would eventually merge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. If it's shaped like a saddle, two parallel lines, as you go far enough, would eventually get farther apart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the same thought is with our universe. If you shine two parallel laser beams through space, if we have what's called flat geometry in the universe, they'll stay parallel. If we've got what's called closed geometry, they will get closer. If we've got open geometry, they'll get farther apart. So the question is, our universe closed or open or flat? And I think for the multiverse models, that at least the ones that they're using to explain or that theorize that could explain some of the things of the universe, requires what's called open geometry. And so far the measurements suggest flat, but the error bars are like too big to be meaningful. You know, it's like okay, if you're measuring something that's like positive 2 instead of a negative 2, but plus or minus 10 kind of thing. You know, it could still be negative 8 or positive 12 or whatever. So that's where they're at. They're hoping this Planck satellite, though, will allow them, I think it's a Planck satellite, will allow them to get enough measurements to grasp the curvature of the universe. And I can't explain it, just like I, you know, for two-dimensional creatures, I couldn't explain how a flat Earth could be wrapped around a sphere. I can't explain how a universe could be wrapped around a fourth dimension. I just think it's kind of fun to think about that our universe is like closed in a curve that you could, you know, go anywhere in a straight line and eventually come back and hit yourself from the back, kind of thing.
I'm guessing that, because I'm wondering, why would anyone use the wording? Because it's simpler to suggest that we're three dimensions within a greater, you know, fourth or tenth or however many dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if it's because of the quantum science that it's suddenly the idea of being wrapped around, just because there are so many more possibilities. Is that why? Why would you use the wording wrapped around?
Because our universe doesn't have a fourth dimension outside of those six that are stagnant. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our universe doesn't have a fourth dimension. But could our three-dimensional universe be shaped around a fourth dimension that's not part of our universe?
A collapsed or dormant? Is that what you're suggesting?
Not a collapsed or dormant one, but like a real kind of shape
mm-hmm.
to it. Mm-hmm. Because of the six ones that stopped expanding are like collapsed or dormant. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no way I can visualize that. But the only way I can say is if you go back to a two-dimensional creature, not being able to visualize a flat Earth wrapped into a ball. They can, and in that, and actually if our universe, say for, and actually, if you go back 1,000 years ago and ask the question, okay, where's the center of the Earth? Mm-hmm. You would think that there's got to be some village and some falafel stand in that village that's at the center, okay? But yet, if somebody could also say, well, our universe has a center, but it's not on the Earth. What? How can that be? It's preposterous. Well, it turns out since our universe is the ball, the center is in the center of the Earth. It's not on the surface. So a lot of people ask a question about the Big Bang. Well, if the Big Bang started someplace, isn't where it started the center? Can't you trace back the explosion, the movement of everything going backwards and find out where it started from? Well, that's not how the Big Bang worked. As they describe it, it's instead of like a grenade exploding, it's more like blowing air into a balloon. And so most likely the center of our universe doesn't exist in our universe. Just as the center of the Earth isn't on the surface of the Earth.
Well, that would explain why it's expanding infinitely in all directions and we can't measure it. Is that what you're saying?
It would explain a lot of things.
Okay.
And it could explain why our universe, you could never travel and find an edge. Okay? And this they don't know. This is a little bit Perry's philosophy. You could never travel and find an edge. You could never get to that point where there are no more stars or never get to some type of wall. But you would never find an edge, but there's a limited number of stars, there's not an infinite number of stars. So if that's the case, to me it would seem logical that if I fired a bullet in this way fast enough, waited long enough, it eventually hit me in the back. You know, no matter which way it picked. Now that's speculation, that's assuming the closed geometry type of stuff. It's not like all astronomers think that, but some think that's possible. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I think I've put you guys all to sleep.
I have a question. Sure. So you mentioned that the Big Bang has 9 dimensions.
Yeah.
Right? So there's 6 that we don't know about.
Right.
So the Revelations verse, the Revelations 21 verses 1 to 2, you mentioned that there's a new heaven and new earth, and therefore these are new dimensions that will eventually, I guess, occur. But will the... Do you think because it's a new heaven and a new earth, does that imply that these are new dimensions that didn't exist back in the Big Bang?
I would guess that it's the dimensions that it's relating, talking about, don't necessarily have to have anything to do with the dimensions that we have. Okay?
Or had.
Mm-hmm. It's possible that they might. Our universe always only had one dimension of time. I tend to suspect that the new creation has a different time dimensionality to it. Okay, whatever that might look like. The reason is because of the second law of thermodynamics. You've got to get away from that. And there's other things that it describes about the new heavens and new earth that are essentially different laws of physics, so that to me would imply different dimensionality. But what I find fascinating is when it talks about not so much this new heavens and new earth being created. When it talks about the old heaven and the old earth going away, it talks about things getting rolled up like a scroll. Okay? And of all the possible things it could pick to describe that, okay, based on what we've seen about the 6 dimensions that stopped and are like rolled up like a scroll, and some physicists that have these weird speculations about how our universe, something could happen and make it collapse and roll up. You know, of all the possible explanations, the one you could kind of pick that's going to make these, like, you know, ultra PhD physicists kind of ponder things is that one.
Yeah, two things. One, how did they find these 6 other dimensions that don't exist today? And the second thing is, if things are going out and they would come around and hit you in the back of the head, mm-hmm. then are there stars coming at us? because something should have looped around and coming back at us. Is anything coming at us, or is everything going away from us?
Okay, the first question, how did they discover these six? I completely got a punt on that. I mean, it's just like, that's like, I'm not even going to pretend to know. I think it has to do with some theories that dropped out of quantum mechanics, and something that dropped out of something called string theory. With string theory, I've heard thrown around. I don't understand that whatsoever. Okay, but it comes out of like high energy particle physics and different things like this. So I wish I knew. I would love to know. It'd probably take like a couple years of study and total financial devastation for me to figure out. Okay, the second thing is, if the universe is expanding, okay, if stars are expanding, and say it is the shape that I just hypothesized just because it sounds fun, like a ball, okay, like you could go in one direction and come back and hit us. If it's expanding, why have the stars not come back around to hit us? Well, the expansion is like, the way the universe is expanding, it is not like a handful of marbles over a table, and I drop these marbles on a table and they scatter and roll across the table. Where the table is not changing, the marbles are getting farther apart from one another. The reasons are is because they're rolling away from each other across the table. They're traveling across the table. That's one type of expansion. The other is, if I have a balloon, I put a little bit of air in it, take a marking pen, put some dots on the balloon. Now I blow more air into that balloon, the balloon expands, the dots are getting farther apart, not because they're traveling across the balloon, because the fabric of the balloon itself is expanding and they're moving farther apart with it.
But the relationship stays pretty much the same to one another.
Yeah, the relative position really does, but they're getting farther apart because the balloon is expanding. Most of the expansion of the universe is caused by the fabric of space getting larger. Okay? Now, within that, you also do have things moving through space. Okay? So it's sort of like, almost like sitting like flies on a balloon. You blow air into the balloon, the flies get farther apart, but the flies are also walking around as well. It's a little bit like that. Because anything within our galaxy, the expansion of our galaxy is really not that space is not that noticeable within our galaxy. Things are moving at us because or away from us just because of relative motion through space. And we do have stars coming towards us, stars moving away. Within our cluster of galaxies, you see the same things because galaxies have relative motions. We do have some things that are called blue shifted, meaning that they're moving towards us. The Andromeda galaxy is actually moving towards us and I think may eventually collide with us at some point. Okay. The other galaxies, most of them I think are moving away. But there are things within our cluster of galaxies moving towards us. Anything beyond our cluster of galaxies, even though they might have a relative motion through space towards us, the expansion of space is fast enough, the net effect is they're moving away from us. So that's why nothing's going to sort of, if the shape I proposed, nothing's going to come back and kind of hit us in that sense.
Things that are moving toward us, could it be because they're on a revolution? And so at times they're going to be coming at us, and then at times they're going away from us. Mm-hmm. And if they're in a big revolution, then we may only see them coming at us until thousands of years later when they actually start to go back.
Well, comets are exactly that way.
Yeah.
Comets are a huge loop. And it's like Halley's Comet was the first one that a guy noticed that there's the sightings of a large comet the exact number of years apart. He says, hey, maybe it's the same comet that's returning. I'm going to predict it's going to show up 42 years from now. Well, I think Halley had died by then. Sure enough, that comet showed up 42 years later. And so that's what comets are. Most of them, the periods are so long, we don't really know, you know, we don't really know when they haven't really seen them before. So you do have that kind of stuff.
Perry.
Sure.
Two questions. First one is, how is conscious kind of conceptualized regarding physics? Like, is it a dimension?
Consciousness. I haven't really heard of it conceptualized in terms of physics. Mm-hmm. You know,
I mean, it's obvious that it exists.
Right.
You know,
Dimension of mind. Rod Serling.
Mind and space. That's right.
Well, I just didn't know if there was any kind of quantification of it in the science field.
I think in philosophy, I'm sure there's people that have really wrestled with that question in philosophy. What is consciousness? You know, I'm sure there's got to be people that...
Well, what it is you know, putting a definition to it. But the fact that it exists, I think it'd be hard-pressed to find someone who doesn't believe consciousness exists.
Right,
and
right.
Therefore, forget how we define it. Where does it set? You know, is it...
Oh, where does it physically exist?
Yeah, is it a dimension?
Yeah.
Is it a force? Is it a law? Is it... You know... And maybe you have to wait for the definition to...
Or is it a characteristic?
Or is it characteristic?
Because some beings have it, some beings don't, from what we can tell.
Right.
Well, and actually an interesting question that is along those lines is it an illusion in a sense? You know, or is... actually, let me sort of... Before I get into this, there's two points that I regretfully forgot to make when we're dealing with this dimensionality thing. And if you think of God being in other dimensions and how that would affect the question of, and like especially with other dimensions of time, of if there's a God, who made God? Well, say if we could jump in and see the another dimension of time or something, that question might just go away. But this also shed some light on a couple other interesting questions, okay? Theological questions. One is the theological issue of free will versus determination, okay? Or free will versus predestination, okay? Like, if we are free will creatures, and we have the freedom to make, to choose over A or B, and somehow God knows the future, knows that we will choose either, it knows which of A or B we're going to choose, the fact that he knows the future, are we really a free will to make that choice? From within our constructs of time, you can't resolve that one, okay? But if you could think of, out of God's, if God has a different concept of time, that may be very understandable to him, how we can have a free will, we've got the freedom to choose A or B, but he still knows which we'll choose. So that question would kind of go away. And another one is like, how can, if you have millions of people praying to God at once, how can you kind of listen to all of them at once? You know, that might go away as well if there's another dimensionality to God in terms of kind of how he does time. So some of these other questions, that theological questions that are wrestled with, once you get out of our three space one time geometry, those questions might be more explainable. Okay, now the reason I got into that was with the whole idea of consciousness comes into the debate: do we really have a free will, or is free will an illusion, or are we completely deterministic? Can you make a computer program? Does that computer program have a free will, or is it just following a C program? Well, if you reduce our mind down to cells and down to chemical reactions and different things like this, is it just that these chemical reactions are inevitable based on the responses and stuff that causes us to think, which makes us think that we have a free will and even think that we have a consciousness, where in reality we're all deterministic? Okay, and there are scientists that make that argument that free will is an illusion, okay, that we're completely deterministic. And you, if you extended that much farther, you would make the argument that consciousness is determinist, is an illusion in a sense. So not what I've done is just, if you had a question in your mind, Don, I've just made the question worse. I haven't nobody's answered it.
Or at least made more questions.
But let me just kind of answer this. There is another discussion, a way you could approach this with quantum mechanics, okay, because with quantum mechanics, the fact that you can't, on a quantum level, you can't determine what the outcome of something's going to be. And a lot of chemical reactions can come down to the quantum level. So you could use that as an argument against determinism. But the other thing is, if there is no God, okay, if there is no spiritual dimension, I think that the argument that we are deterministic, that there the three wills an illusion, okay, is probably a more sound argument, or is more plausible. If there is a God and if there is a spiritual realm, and we are a hybrid between a physical and a spiritual creature, then that would very well explain how there could be free will. I'll leave it at that before I dig myself in a hole and never get out.
It might be interesting. I don't know anything about consciousness, but in my field it's very hot to try to understand what it is.
And what
so
is your field?
I'm in the neuroscience field, but
okay,
not real reversed in consciousness. But there's a book out there that talks a lot about strange loops, and this idea that if you get reverberation within a circuit, that in a sense produces an emergent property that would be considered consciousness. For us, maybe we can think about the fact that we aren't always conscious, and that that means there's some property in our brain that goes offline and then we lose consciousness. And so in a way, there's some part of our brain, they talk about like when you're an fMRI machine, they used to think that if you're doing nothing, your brain would be relatively inactive, but now they have a lot of evidence for a default mode. So anytime somebody's just laying in a scanner, they see the default mode network going. But we know that when we're in the scanner, we're thinking, we're planning. And part of what our cortex, they think, is doing is that as we grow up, we have this huge memory framework of predictions that we're able to make. So we're a huge hard drive in that sense, but we're more than a hard drive because we walk around the world and we say, I predict this spatially or temporally about my environment. And in a way, we're doing that in our own brains. Like, I predict this about myself. And so this idea of consciousness is some emergent property of our ability to store information and make predictions,
mm-hmm,
and apply that outside of the world, but then also apply that internally. And I can't explain it any more than that, but it's fascinating to think that it could actually be a biological part of our brain. Because mm-hmm, for a long time, we thought this has to be something outside of the neural circuits themselves. But there's a really interesting guy, and I know I've mentioned it to a few people, I think I mentioned to Greg, is this book called On Intelligence by the guy who invented the Palm Pilot. And he's really excited right now about making intelligent computers or intelligent machines that would have something like consciousness, which seems really wild, but he wants to model it after our cortex to try to get this reverberating strange loop. Anyway, I can't remember the name of this book, but this book is like 600 pages, and it's all about strange loops. Things like, is it the Escher drawings where you get this upstairs? Like,
mm-hmm,
he uses that as a model to say that these things actually exist. These strange loops that you kind of can't get out of exist in various domains of our world.
Right.
But even with those like thoughts, I still can't get my mind around what that emergent property could possibly be.
Well, yeah, and to kind of piggyback on that a little bit, the book I read, Ray Kurzweil, he talks about singularity coming with the computer advanced intelligence, where big numbers again, the brain makes X number, I don't know, billions or trillions of calculations, connections, whatever, per second. And right now, computer technology is not there, but is with, you know, Moore's Law and all this stuff, kind of getting closer. And at some point within, I don't know, say around 2050, who knows, maybe earlier or less, plus or minus 20 years, who knows, that computers will be able to do as many calculations per second as the human mind. Whether the computer will be creative or not, or, you know, conscious or not, is a separate thing. But when the, you know, raw horsepower of a computer exceeds our own brains, and we can start building in some sort of, you know, microphone to pick up audio and video and take in all of the data that a human being could do, and we have, you know, again, this is like thousands of hours of programming, but basic structural programming that would allow inputs to be taken in, internalized, you use the word predictive, which I think is interesting, predictive or assumptions based on what it's taking in, at what point, you know, because that's going to keep going further. Unfortunately, the rate of human minds, I don't see significant increases in raw horsepower.
It's probably almost going the other way.
Yeah, possibly. You know, like the TV or something. They definitely have a computer that will beat you at chess in Jeopardy, I think.
John Hawkins, this guy who invented the Palm Pilot, argues that computers are far more powerful, and the problem is that the people who are doing AI research are trying to make computers without really understanding what makes our cortex so phenomenal. And it's a hierarchy, and it uses dimensions of time, and there's prediction, there's memory. And so right now we're not really using, like when we try to get a robot to walk around, we're not using memory and time to predict how it should step.
Right.
So we're fundamentally going about the problem in a different way than our brain goes about the problem.
Right.
And AI has thought that they could make those advances. These are his arguments. Mm-hmm. But I think he's got something. And he gives a good example about the number of steps, just in terms of, you think about how much time does it take for a synapse to fire. And if you talk about doing a simple computation, how many synapses must you have, or what's the maximum number of synapses? I'll look up the example and send you guys.
Yeah.
But essentially he deduces that for some simple calculation, the max number of synapses you could have is 100 for this particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
To get a computer to do that same thing, they can't do it with thousands and thousands and thousands of connections, because they're going about it in a very different way.
Right.
So his argument is our brain actually does computation in a very simple way, but using other rules. And so you can spend a lot of money making a faster, stronger computer, and you're just... His argument is you're not going to get there.
Right.
But
so part of that is part of our conscious decisions is based on our morals, and that varies from person to person, but our values and so on.
Yeah, that's what's more like more in the computation.
Morals are just...
That affects our individual computations a little bit.
Yeah, maybe just like, maybe with math, would it... If we were really just thinking about computation, maybe it would be separate from morality. I don't know.
Well, morality is not the main decision maker all the time, but I think in certain decisions it affects us,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. we don't all human beings have the same morals.
No, we have different structures of belief, ethical. You know, even just in ethics, you can look at it like for the greater good, for the greater individual, for the greater. Whatever, and then we have morals, and we have, you know, religious belief structures which may overlap, and we decide, you know, without even thinking about it, decide on which ones to use for which thing. You know, if you're gonna walk down the street, you don't really need to use your religious beliefs structure on that. You're using your instinctual.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it affects all your decisions, but it affects some decisions.
Oh, absolutely, but so that's just like saying, okay, if we have a computer, we can just lay in multiple sets of instructions and. Somehow it will learn, you know, by using memory and things.
To make more consistent decisions than we make.
What?
I guess, like that. We could program something to have logic, maybe, but just simply logic, but no other dimensions of, like, emotions and the food and
the
morality and all that that also factor into decisions.
Yeah, there's a sci-fi book I read of, part of the story was a computer that had become self-aware, and they really didn't know why, and only a couple people knew that it was self-aware, and then something happened, the computer had to get shut down, and when they brought it back up, it wasn't self-aware again, and they didn't know if it was ever going to kind of wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but like it went from the mode of the processors to all of a sudden like a consciousness.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, the number one is we have this raw horsepower that either meets or exceeds us, why are we programming it to be us? You know, is there maybe, you know,
mm-hmm.
the higher, not a higher use, but a, you know, we're not, according to what you're saying, and I believe that we're not programming it to be like us. We're programming what we think we do, but it's not truly what we do.
That's right.
But even if we knew how we truly did it,
yeah.
Is that, I mean, perhaps, because based on the grand design theory, like, that would be a very fine-tuned system. We can get that fine-tuning down, but perhaps there's even gaps in that. Like somebody mentioned the emotional side of it, which emotional responses can be great, you know, but there's times when emotional responses, we all know, are not necessarily the best response, you know. So,
so
we are not perfect systems, I guess is what I'm saying. So, modeling a computer after us, if we're striving for a perfect system, may not be. we may not be the model to use for a perfect system.
There's something on Charlie Rose last night, and I don't know if you ever watched Charlie Rose, but it's pretty interesting. He had some guys talking about the brain and stuff last night. I taped it because I had some other things going on. I just kind of watched. But it was really interesting. They were talking about creativity and, you know, how you take existing things and somehow you create something new from existing things in general and stuff. And they said they did some analysis and they found that it was in the very back of the brain. They found that somebody would be working on something, and I forgot exactly, you know, I was just kind of partially watching it, but I taped it. But they said something like, they found that later, when the person stopped working on the problem and let their mind go and got away from it, that's when the idea came. You know, like people say,
yeah,
when they're in the shower, whatever. And somehow they put up some kind of sensors, whatever, and they found that there was this area in the back of the brain that all of a sudden stimulated right before they found the answer. I know they were giving them things like they would say, crayon, sauce, and something else. And what's the common thing of it? And it was apple. Crayon, apple, applesauce, and apple tree or something. And then the person would work on it, but just before they would get the answer, this area in the back of the brain that they didn't even know existed or whatever, all of a sudden got stimulated, and all of a sudden got active, and then they came up with the answer.
Right.
And so it was like something they had never seen before. And part of it was, they said too, was that it gets stimulated when you're sleeping or something, and a lot of times you can't figure something out. When you do the opposite, you totally get away from it. And that's because they think maybe this is possibly giving you the answer, but you're so intent on working on the problem that you're not listening to this part of the brain.
Right.
Telling you you relax, that all of a sudden, bam, now you can hear it, and maybe it's been sending you the whole time or something.
Yeah.
And what about, like, allegedly, the Beatles wrote some of their songs when they were on LSD. Like, how do drugs affect?
Yeah, no, I've wondered that many times.
I've tried it out many times.
But, like, with creativity, because if you're letting go of some of those restrictions,
exactly.
Yeah. So they see colors and so forth, and it's like.
Right.
Wait, were you shaking your head now?
I know that when something is more automatic, like reading.
Oh, no, I don't. She asked me if I knew.
For kids that have learning disabilities, they're using more parts of their brain. So it's like more to coordinate, more that's working together versus kids that are fluent readers are using less of their brain. Is that a,
I feel like you're the one who's going to know this all. But I don't know. So it's almost like with automaticity, we use maybe less of our brain and it's that.
I think that there's, from what I've gathered from thousands of informal sources and drawing from my memory here, that's the same exact thing that, you know, some people that have like Asperger's syndrome. They have this whatever part of the brain it is, intense connectivity to that or usage of that, or, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, I can remember every record that anyone ever created and whatever, you know, it's like, oh, let's create trivial knowledge and cool for Jeffrey, I guess, for that subject. And then other people have just, you know, the ability to just hear music playing and be able to pick out what notes they are and go to the piano and play it. And sometimes they're studied, learned, you know, developed skills and abilities, and sometimes they're just
savant people too.
Yeah.
I was just reading about this week, that you can develop savantism. I didn't know this. If you have left lobe brain damage, did you guys, or if you're going through dementia, suggesting that there's, some people think that means there's some latent inhibition of your right brain by your left brain.
Interesting.
And that you have more creativity and.
But
you
if
know,
you self-induce that dementia,
I know, and then they're trying to do that with some.
Because I was wondering if you use some other drugs, is that actually, because we only use, 5% of the 3 pounds or whatever we've got up here, so we're only using a few ounces.
We use all of it.
And through drugs, like LSD or whatever, you know, is that expanding going into these other areas? Because I always wonder too, like, you know, the homeless people see them, they're talking to themselves, they walk across the street, and I always wonder. You know, they're seeing somebody and they're talking and somebody's talking back to them and they're interacting with
they definitely have a different perception of what's going on.
I don't know if it's because of the chemicals in here or are they seeing somebody in a spiritual realm and maybe there is somebody there and we just don't see them or whatever. I don't know.
I talk to myself.
There's a puzzle somebody sent me that's like a photograph of different Legos that represent things, and I haven't figured it out, but I showed it to my nephews and don't tell me what it is. Don't tell me, because I want to get it, but it's like both my nephews figured it out. They said, oh, just the lights all of a sudden went on, but they said, but I still haven't, you know, it's like I haven't figured it out yet, but I know that there's that gotta be a conceptual jump where they'll go up. But I know it's something like I'm trying all these like mathematical algorithms and stuff, but I realize, well, it's
run as fast as you can the opposite direction. That's all I can say.
So I'll have to see how long did it take you to figure it out?
Oh, literally like 5 seconds.
Did it really?
Yeah.
I feel like such a loser.
You asked that question.
We got it from the same person, and I'm sorry, blanking on the name.
Yeah, I know, I'm totally blanking on the name too.
That's my mental deficiencies that I've
used to have. Well, stop thinking about it. I have four nephews. What is this?
Bring lost Lego.
I'll email it to everybody. Yeah. I'll email the puzzle to everybody.
And we can all measure our response time.
Yeah, you should not open the email with the video stopwatch, and then you can do it. 7 seconds, 14 seconds.
But nobody. Nobody say, I figured it out, it's this, because that'll ruin it. I want to try and figure it out.
It'll
be months from now.
Please do send it.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I didn't get all of them, uh-huh, only because I technically lacked the knowledge. Uh-huh. You know? So.
That makes me feel good.
But do you think I'm going to get it, or do you think I'm like, it's like...
I don't think you're going to get it.
You don't
think
you're
going to get it. You're too cerebral. You're not going to get it. I mean,
yeah, that's
hopefully their cord is off.
That's right. Exactly.
I wish you the best of luck, but I don't think you're going
to
get it.
That's what my nephews figured it out. They're smart. My
try
nephews
in the
smart.
Morning before you're fully awake.
That's right. That's right. Try some LSD.
Yeah.
I'll forward it to everybody. Okay. But so the rule is you can't reply to all, oh, I figured it out, it's this, okay, because that'll spoil
right.
everybody
else.
No got
comments
it?
Until
no hints.
You've solved it.
Yeah, no hints, just say, I figured it out. But the other thing I want to mention is this thing about consciousness. An interesting thing to look at is some of these near-death experiences where, and some of them you can kind of explain by things, but some of them where people have been flatlined, where they're seeing things that they can't, there's no way they could have known or no way they could have seen otherwise. And that's kind of a, you know, where you've got a consciousness that's not really coming from the brain, or is it, or how could it perceive these different things? So,
well, I just wonder, is consciousness in some very simplistic way the difference between two potential options? So obviously you don't have a consciousness about breathing, you just breathe. There's only one way. You don't really think about it. So therefore, are you consciously breathing? Subconsciously breathing, I guess, you just, I don't know what.
Because then you think, now I'm thinking about it, and I'm consciously.
Yeah, but you're not breathing because you're thinking about it. I mean, maybe if you said, okay, I'm going to consciously take deep breaths, maybe now I'm thinking about it. But
hold your breath.
But, you know, I guess my question is, you know, if an animal that doesn't have a conscience, let's just say a bear, and bears walk through the jungle, through the forest, and it sees something and wants to eat it, just eats it. It doesn't have a morality structure that says, oh, you shouldn't eat this because you've eaten too much already today, or you shouldn't eat this because that's an endangered species, you know? Or you shouldn't eat this because whatever. It just does, and it has like one set of rules, and if you have one set of rules, there's no conflicts, there's no difference, you just do, and therefore there's no conscious. Do we have a conscious because, you know, I say, oh, you know, I want to have an orange right there, but I know I shouldn't because A, I'm going to have something to eat later and it might disturb that, or B, I also have this, you know, another, you know, we're able to see at various perspectives and the repercussions, or because we have different belief structures. So, you know, as far as, you know, I'm walking down the street and I see the homeless man Greg referenced, and I say, should I give him $1 because it seems like he could use it? And my one belief structure says, well, I'm just going to give him $1 because I'm a nice person and I'm helping him out. But then the conflict comes when I say, or am I just enabling him to just continue to go, you know, panhandling forever or whatever? And maybe there's a... But then my religion says I should, you know, help the weak and, you know, the less fortunate. And then I also, there's a benefit to that, is it's going to get me somewhat maybe closer to my God or my heaven or my whatever, according to history. So is the consciousness this situation that arises from multiple sets of, you know, I don't know if there's any thought on that from anybody. As opposed
you're
to the bear,
with
just
morals and values.
Right, but
yeah,
I'm saying
a bear
is
has consciousness.
Has
like
consciousness, yes,
but not a conscious
awareness.
Not a conscious that maybe you know, or maybe a bear does look at something and say, "Oh, I'd like to eat that piece of fruit," but you know.
Well, I think we're not defining the word conscious in the same way.
Well, one is like self-awareness. There's creativity. Those things are different. Animals can't do. You mentioned that a couple weeks ago.
But
you're talking about self-preservation with the bear, I think, in some ways to start, but the bear, you know, can decide that's a rotten animal and I'm a bear. We'll leave that for the vultures.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right, but
I'm a bear. I don't eat that.
That's
right. I mean, they decide it's more likely that a predator is coming from that direction versus an animal.
Right,
that's just instinctual.
But it's all based on self-preservation.
Maybe that's more instinctual, but I guess I think of conscience is more like there's a self-evaluation process, too.
Right.
There's something
that
says...
But the way you could evaluate yourself is by a set of standards. And if a bear has one set of standards, self-survival, then what are you comparing? What are you considering?
The mama bear protecting its cubs, it's thinking of
her offspring. Right, but if
she's... So she has some feelings, obviously, about her offspring.
Could be like a dog or something, a trained dog and stuff, and you tell him not to do certain things, and then all of a sudden you see he did something, and you go, "Butch." And he puts his tail behind
and
goes,
he looks
in
the face.
They have emotions
to
some degree, for sure.
Yeah, I think animals have some emotions.
Is that a trend?
They don't have that sense.
Yeah, but
see,
are you building another
something.
Structure for them that says, you know,
a reaction?
Well,
to
he's afraid of getting punished more than that he felt badly about whatever he did.
Now, let me throw out a couple interesting things here. Within our universe, most of it, there was no consciousness whatsoever, okay? Because if there was other life on other planets or something, we know that there was the first several billions years of the universe, there could have been no life. And there will be a time in a universe, even if there's other planets or other civilizations after us, where it's what's called the heat death of the universe, so the universe burns out, where there will be no more consciousness either. You know, so it's like within the universe, consciousness is something that showed up and something that'll kind of go away. There's a thing.
Yeah.
But back to that question is, could there be a self-existing reality that doesn't have a consciousness if we have a consciousness that made everything? Could this have all come from something without a consciousness?
Something that's really mind-bending. I won't say too much about it, but if you think about the Trinity, I heard someone give a lecture on this idea that you have God the Father, God the Son is the image of the Father, so it's like we could have an image of our own selves in our own mind, a manifestation of that,
mm-hmm.
and that the Spirit, someone described it as it's like God's mind bending back on itself, but that makes the Trinity, and I could tell you who gave a lecture on it, but that there's this idea of consciousness within the Christian concept of the Trinity. I can't
Where
really
did you
explain
hear
it.
This? Not in a sermon.
It was in a podcast, yeah.
Oh.
But by a preacher, but anyway, I could send it to you. I tried to take notes on it, and I still can't explain it.
Yeah, if you can send a link, I'd be curious to.
But yeah, it's really
yeah,
interesting to think about why the Trinity might address some of this.
Well, I think some of the core things about all religions are that, you know, my belief is the creators and founders of the religion are trying to tell some of the simplest things in the world through stories that are understandable, and that it seems plausible that, you know, that could be a story of like, well, you have you that you see yourself as, like, I see myself as a successful person, but then I have the outer self that others perceive me as, and maybe that's not successful, or maybe it's more successful than I see myself. And then there's some sort of, you know, again, difference or space between that, which is, you know, hopefully, you know, if it's in alignment, then we're all good. But if there's some gross distortion of one or the other, then there's a, you know, kind of a space between the two. I've never heard that the Trinity. By the way, but it's interesting, and I don't say I would believe it, but it fits into my belief that a lot of religious stories, not just Christian religious stories, are, you know, the moral of the story is, you know, like, you know, they are that, you know, that's kind of
instruction.
Yeah, and it's exactly that.
Well, and there's a sense that even if a story is true, it could fill that purpose too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it doesn't mean that the story is not true or true.
But there's the story,
you know. And
but the facts provided, the language used is for a purpose sometimes, and you choose language and facts and telling something, a doctrine or a story, but you may not be including everything.
I read my son a story that, you know, Jack and the Beanstalk or something, and, you know, he's hearing this great story, he's entertained by it, but at the same time, he's realizing, oh, I shouldn't do this, or, you know, the weather cried wolf, like, what's the moral story? It's like, just don't lie and don't make stories up.
I could tell you about my day, and it would take, I could tell you everything about my day, and it would take a lot longer to tell you all about my day than probably me just living through my day.
If I didn't
take that long, you might not understand all the different, you know, essences and experiences that were the fullness of my day.
Well, that goes to what Perry was mentioning is, does God or, you know, higher being have a determinate, does he see the end result? And then, you know, I guess the end, you know, we also can see the end result, but it's this heat death thing that you mentioned. I mean, that's the end result. But that's the end, and here's where we are, but does he or she have the knowledge of the gabillion paths that will make up not our lives, but every single moment of every day? Does he know I'm doing my arm like this? Does he know I'm not? You know, is that knowledge important? Or are they just, you know, like, okay, just let's just get the highlight reel out for my life or for your day? You know? So the end point, I think, is an interesting thing, but also the path getting there.
Yeah.
You know?
And also, I don't know if anyone else has experienced this, but about a year and a half ago, I was hit by a car, and I lost consciousness for a few minutes. Like, it was like being in surgery where you have no dreams or any. Like, so, like, what's that all about? It was a head injury, I suppose, of some, but not really. Mm-hmm. But it's like, is that a way for me to not have experience and tightened up? Or
well, more of my random remembrances. This is a recently read article that I read. Talked about, you know, the light that people see at the end, you know, at situations like this. And I'm not saying you did or didn't see a light, but the brain, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but the article was stating that when
so
your brain is under
that onto the street before the car.
No, when your body or your person or your brain is under shock things, and this may be, this may be defined best as, you know, you're walking into the street, and you have, you know, we're taking all the processing and the hundreds of thousands of streets we've walked across, and now something completely out of the blue happens, like a car hits you, completely outside of the, you know, the black swan event, you know, the economy crashes or whatever. Now your brain, shrinks, but focuses, like, you know, like fight or flee, and it's like it flees and it says, you know, let's just focus on core. Core processes, exactly. And that's what they're saying is everyone who sees the light may be seeing, maybe just, it's kind of like, I'm trying to.
It could be a physiological.
It's like the end of the movie when the movie fades out.
Yeah.
It's like, that's like literally happening with your eyes. Your eyes are open, you're taking all this stuff, and then, you know, your brain is like, fade out the eyes, you know, we got to focus on, you know, are the liver still working? Are we still breathing? So the light is basically just a diffused vision, you know.
And they say that a whole lot more too. That's kind of interesting. And when stories start to compare,
well, no, but what they're saying is,
doctors told me that's common when you're a human.
I've read,
but
a shock of some sort. You go unconscious to avoid.
But the article was saying that's exactly, we all go through.
there's chemical endorphins released or not released, and this whole situation of results comes out. Well, it's not even a visual. It's more of a lack of visual. You know,
right.
you don't keep focusing
because
you just lose focus. And you don't keep thinking, so there is no dream. Like, brain's like, we don't have time to dream. We're just trying to process. We're doing like a systems check of the body. What's working, what's not, all these things.
It reminds me of what they say that the Native Americans thought they saw because they'd never seen ships before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, big ships. They'd seen
rowboats,
right? But, or they made their own canoes or whatever. But they just figured they must be seeing big clouds coming.
Right, because the only thing possible they can compare it.
That's so big, so white.
Yeah.
What else is it? So that's what you're making me think of.
Yeah.
Yeah.